Welcome, Pathfolk, to the Find the Path Adventures actual play of the Sovereign Court side story.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, it's
dun,
not dun. An adventure path, so you can't say that.
It's true.
All right, let's
it's
do it all
It's Pathfinder Society modules related to War for the Crown, but still, it's not technically War for the Crown.
Honestly, it's just Pathfinder Society adjacent, considering how many changes I make to these things.
Because also, anyway, we're not Pathfinders. It's a whole thing.
Yes, well, I'm just saying that's what we're running is
You're
Society
You're also Pathfinder
modules.
Adjacent. Welcome back, everyone, to the continued exploits of our heroes. Again, as we'd mentioned recently, we are taking a brief break from War for the Crown. See the previous outro to the last episode. If you're one of those people that reaches in, I'm just like, we'll pick it up here next time, and you immediately turn it off. You might be a little confused. So we are going to be doing the Sovereign Court for the next couple of weeks. More or less, again, just to kind of recap at the end off there to give everyone a little bit of a chance to recover. And by everyone, I mean everyone but the ladies, because the ladies here have to work more than the men, because much like the lionesses of Tal'Dor, they're doing the heavy lifting.
Where is my Dolly Parton song?
Yes.
It's true. And I don't know why I'm not counted, because I'm the dude, but I still have to work all the time regardless. So
yes,
it is what it is. So to recap a little bit, as it's been a couple of weeks.
I think it's been more than a couple of weeks. I think it's been a couple months.
Might have been a couple of years. Months. It's been a little bit.
We've had a bit of a break for the characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, I think it's only been like 12 weeks since the last Sovereign Court story. Just feels like a lot longer because you guys have been kicking butt and taking names over there with the Knights of Summer.
Well, we've really been having tea and looking at stuff.
Somebody on the Discord was talking about the privilege of the War for the Crown characters when it comes to Tyrant's Grasp characters and everything. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, don't compare them.
Yeah,
yeah, best not.
But yeah, so we're going to be starting things back up with our Sovereign Court side story characters, the Sovereign Court heroes. And to recap a little bit of exactly who they are. Again, these are five characters, as any of you listening to War for the Crown are probably familiar with by this point. The thing that binds together the War for the Crown characters, the Knights of Summer, was that magical summer that they spent together with Princess Eutropia and bonding together and all the rest of that stuff before going their own disparate ways. And again, they were not the only children there. There were actually eight noble families invited. And as such, there were actually eight total noble children there. Actually, there are 10 noble children there in total. Well, again, that's also a misstatement. There were 10 PCs, 10 future PCs there. There were also like all the Lothied children were there as well, yeah. Plus Princess Eutropia. There were basically like 15 children shoved into a manor house.
Yes.
And so we've been mostly following the friends of Princess Eutropia. However, Prince Carius, the future Grand Prince of Tal'Dor, as was supposed to be his destiny, was there as well. Unfortunately, Prince Carius died before he could ever ascend to the Primogen throne. And so the friends of Prince Carius eventually joined up with Lady Marilla, a name probably familiar to those of you somewhat familiar with the Pathfinder Society, as she is actively engaged in that and has also been featured in War for the Crown up until this point, to help form an organization known as the Sovereign Court, which is a faction in the Pathfinder Society. But it's also an organization that Lady Marilla had been working towards for years, the idea being nobles united for a greater cause. And so the idea of all of these nobles working together to try to lift up Tal'Dor, and now the scope of that has started to expand beyond even Tal'Dor to this idea of uniting the nobility of the Inner Sea, because again, almost every single nation, with pretty much the exception of Andoran, really, have nobles and Galt. They killed all theirs, but have nobles that could work together to try to further the goals of the Sovereign Court, which is more or less this idea of creating a more utopian society. And so we left off as we were going through the events of Honor's Echo, which was a collection of quests, as each one of the characters had an opportunity to kind of get some solo time, to get the spotlight shine directly on them. And we'd had a chance to meet with Count Albert Falspar, Countess Josephine Heskalar, and Landgrave Isidore Darahan, who are the three characters that will be returning today, as well as Count Hennessy Denzarni and Lord Vernon Kastner.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as previously stated, there were 8 noble families there, but there are 5 PCs. Ergo, we have a little bit of a repeat Darahan Kastner situation. They had an heir and a spare, if you will.
Wow.
So they're from different lines, I think.
Yes, we're from different lines of the family.
It's true.
Oliver is Izzy's cousin.
Yes.
But yeah, we left off with all of these heroes celebrating after they had successfully redeemed the name of Countess Onaria Alcosti and had a chance to meet with Romario Alcosti.
That guy.
That guy.
They had helped as well. Which had mostly been that guy, and then he was really that guy, and then you reach the end and you're like, that guy. He's not a bad sort, he's just not particularly good at things.
Yeah.
Which can be said of most of Taldor, at the very least the nobility. But yeah, so we're going to be kicking this back off with a continuation of this side story, focusing on our, in this case, two dudes and one lady in the case of Count Albrecht and Landgrave Isidore, and one lady in the form of Countess Josephine, but with our ladies here.
Yes.
I think that recaps that pretty well.
I think so.
Yeah. And now it's been 2 years.
And now it's been two years.
It's funny. I'm just going to throw this out here right now, and he'll probably get a laugh about it later on. I'm just so used to Jordan filling the air. I'm just so used to saying things, and Jordan's immediately like, ha 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 ha. I find I'm guilty of it whenever Ross is gaming, that I'm just, or game mastering, that I'm just like, and now I feel the silence.
The rest of us are just like, silence is fine. It'll get caught during editing.
It'll be caught in the truncate silence automated effect.
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll be kicking things back off about 2 years after the events of Honor's Echo. Again, Honor's Echo took place in the year 4708, which for those of you following along at home, which I hope is everyone, the events of the first two books of War for the Crown have both taken place in 4718. So the events of Honor's Echo was 10 years before the events that kicked off the War for the Crown. Now we're jumping forward to 4710. So it's been about
8 years in the past from
past from the characters you were listening to last week, but it's still 2 years in the future from when they were before.
Have we gotten everybody confused yet?
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, the first season of The Witcher. You just kind of have to figure out when
things
are happening.
At least we're telling you in advance the timeline is different.
It's true. We're not going to surprise you halfway through with, you know, you're going through this and you're like, oh, it's 10 years in the past, blah, 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 blah. And then suddenly, like, Isildur walks around the corner and, I don't know, stabs a ghoul or something like that in Merrick County.
Isildur?
Yeah, Isildur.
Isildur. I've already started
Isildur.
That
again. Just call him Izzy. That's what all of his friends call him anyway.
Cast it into the fire. Destroy it.
That's Izzy talking about all of Tal'Dorei nobility. Just throw it in the fire.
Cast it into the fire.
You're
then
that.
Cast me into the fire.
That just is ridiculous.
But I suppose let's go ahead and kick things back off again, shall we? So 2 years have passed since the events of Honor's Echo. 2 years that have not been quiet for all of you, because, again, unlike our Knights of Summer, who basically went, we had a wonderful summer together, now let's sit on our laurels and do things.
Wait, who is sitting on what, laurels?
we did things. They just didn't
did
do
something.
Intrigue and espionage.
We weren't adventuring.
Yes.
Those characters were not doing adventuring.
They were just living life.
Yeah.
These characters have been, the last 2 years haven't been like hugely excited, but you have been keeping up with some things. And I say they haven't necessarily been hugely excited because you guys are also level 4. So you haven't done anything to deserve another level up.
We've just maintained our fourth level.
Which is weird considering how many bandits I fight on my lands.
It's true. How much monster hunting
to give
I do.
You experience.
Rachel's out there grinding levels on the side of the World's Edge Mountains.
And you're like, damn it, none of these are high enough level to give me any XP.
Yep, I guess I gotta go murder another bandit camp.
Dang it.
So to kick things back off, 2 years have passed since the events at the end of Honor's Echo. 2 years have passed since you'd last spoken with Romario Alcosti, since you'd gone and met with the Princess Eutropia in Opara. Basically, since you'd been last on a major mission together. And to be perfectly honest, getting together and performing some sort of daring act of do and all the rest of that is not exactly what you're planning on doing today, let alone tonight. However, sometimes things just kind of work out. The three of you have each found yourselves in Opara for this summer for a variety of different reasons.
Ugh, gross.
Again, I imagine more likely than not for Count Albrecht Falspar, representing his family's interests, making his way down to Opera, probably to help negotiate in some form of lumber contract or another with the local lumber guilds, and particularly probably with the local Tal'Dane Navy, since while Casimir is the base for the Tal'Dane Navy, its actual Naval Academy, as well as the people that would approve new building contracts, are here, much to the chagrin of the people of Casimir.
I just think that he owed his older brother a favor because he's not really a city boy, but it's fine.
Yeah.
He's here.
I mean, everyone finds their way to Opara periodically.
Yep.
In the case of Josephine Heskalar coming down from the World's Edge Mountains over there in the Kyrus Prefecture, one, it's a nice break from the Kyrus Prefecture, to be perfectly honest, and the constant infighting and problems that occur there. And two, it gives you a chance to come down here and negotiate exports from Mahato and the various Dwarven Forge weapons that are made there, and representing your family and representing Stormwatch coming down here. And you're very good at intimidating, so making certain that people are following the letters of the agreements that they have.
That's right. I just give them a look, and it's usually enough.
Give them the good old stink eye. And in the case of... Landgrave Darahan, I imagine, probably coming here after having spoken more likely than not at Zamar, and spoken to the, if not the rulers of Zamar, because likely not the rulers of Zamar. I don't think you're probably going to the High Strategos himself, but speaking to some people in Zamar and then eventually coming to Opara to plead the case before, feasibly, you even have a Senate meeting arranged, or at the very least with some senators from the White March Prefecture, to negotiate additional forces for the Headwater Gap. And dealing with the problems of the Zamar scrublands.
Which is what I'm in charge of.
Basically, of like, we need more patrols here. Like,
the orcs
I know,
are acting up again.
Yeah. The orcs are acting up, or, you know, there's always the Cadurans. You never know what's going on over there. Although, generally speaking, Isidor has a fairly good relationship with the Cadurans, being a follower of Serenry himself.
Yeah, and speaking Kelish and, you know, respecting their culture. Yeah.
That's true. And being pen pals with some Cadiran kid or something like that.
He's
in the south,
almost
that you're
old,
like,
enough to become squire.
Why are you in house with a child?
I say,
sorry,
kid.
Garrity,
I think
just appeared.
I think he was,
which makes
I
sense.
I think he was 15 before,
Izzy,
but
yeah, because Izzy and her, that's what she writes in the, when Isidore explains this to her. That's what she immediately writes back. Why are you in house with a child?
Well, he was marched off into the middle of the desert with only a magical talking sword to guide him. So I figured he could use some older brother. I'm in a big brother, big sister program. This Kadiran kid. However, you'd had the opportunity to meet with one another, and you'd each had the opportunity separately to meet with Lady Marilla, who is also currently in Opara, having returned back from Absalom for business. As such, it was not necessarily surprising, although perhaps a little worrying, when you'd each received a missive to please meet her this evening at sunset and to bring weapons.
Oh, great. That should be exciting.
Yeah, Izzy's down for this. What are we doing? This sounds fun.
Take off the noble outfit, put on the noble hunting attire.
Yes.
With armor and such.
No travel involved. Don't worry about your backpacks, but unless you need any of your adventuring gear. Bring your adventuring gear, but don't worry about 5 days trail rations or anything like that.
Very good, very good.
And as such, you all find yourselves in the beautiful, beautiful city of Opara. Again, Opara is the capital of the nation of Tal'Dor, one of the largest cities in the Inner Sea, boasting a population of over 100,000 souls. And it is currently late in the month of Serenith, which makes it quite warm. It's the equivalent of June. And as such, considering it is a coastal city, somewhat warm and somewhat humid. However, each of you have been probably staying in the Lionsgate district, except for those of you who have like a family home here, which would probably be in Arden's View. And I can imagine it only would be maybe Josephine Heskalar would have a actual townhouse or something like that in Arden's View.
I mean, considering I lived here for a while, it would make sense.
I'm comfy because my lion skin cloak is a cloak of Endure Elements, so whatever.
I don't know if your Endure Elements is Endure Humidity.
Your hair looks weird,
It says nothing, Gads. Your hair is incredibly poofy, but you feel cool. However, all of you make your way across the city and eventually arrive at a familiar location for the audience and for all of you, although a less familiar location for your characters.
Oh, my God.
As you make your way up towards the Lazy Lion Cafe.
Yeah.
This beautiful
cafe. Is the
guy
still going to work there? These are my questions.
This beautiful cafe, as each of you arrive... the man at the gate greets each of you in that It's like, excuse me, I suppose you're here for your... Oh, I see you have an invitation. And, of course, recognizes each of you and makes an amazing knowledge nobility check to recognize each one of your prominent houses and gestures all of you inside, considering that the Valspars, the Heskalars, and the Darahans are all great houses, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yep. So they're just like, oh, come in, come in.
Yes, yes.
You make your way in, and you are taken upstairs to the green room, which is not where you get ready to perform. It's just the room that happens to be green. There's also a red room and a blue room.
We think we met Martella in the blue room. Mm.
But the green room of the Lazy Lion Cafe is well appointed. You can hear the soft murmur of the evening crowd from below as it is approaching sunset as you arrive. A table here has been set with a full array of pastries.
Ooh.
And a seating here for five. As you step in, you find that the three of you, as I suppose you would have each gathered together either beforehand in that, like, hey, did you get this letter? I got this letter. Or maybe you're already planning on, you might have already been planning on having lunch or something like that, of like, oh, I guess we're getting together this evening.
Well, if we're all in town, we might as well hang out.
Catch up with your old friends. A table here, however, has been set. And as you arrive, there are two figures. One you immediately recognize. The other not so much. A map of the city lays neatly folded near the chair set out for the three of you, judging by the two that have taken their own chairs. And as you enter, the other two stand to their feet. Lady Marilla, of course, you immediately recognize. Tall, raven-haired woman wearing a dress reserved fashion, with her usual modicum of jewelry, enough to be socially acceptable, but definitely not enough to be glamorous by any stretch. As she steps and politely inclines her head, since despite the fact that she does have so much political power and so many connections across the inner sea, she is but a lady below all of your station.
But an influential lady.
Yes, but she doesn't have the title. That's
doesn't
the
have
thing.
The name.
Yep.
The man, however, stands to his feet, bows graciously in the way that someone who is below your station does as well, although not quite as deeply as the curtsy that Lady Marilla gives you. The man is slender. Average height, kind of this slender and effete. However, the man wears the latest fashion in pressed dark velvet with this white ascot that is billowing and carries a fine dueling sword which bounces on his hip as he stands to his feet. He has shortcut, perfectly coiffed hair and this resting look that you can only describe as smug self-satisfaction.
Oh God.
I think Josephine is this, already put off.
It gives him this unmistakable air of a Taldane noble fop.
Oh. Mm. Great.
Wonderful.
I'm going to brace myself for this.
Yep.
Albie thinks to himself.
As the three of you step in, the gentleman that led you upstairs bows. And again, as the quintessential greeter and servant bows in, has already taken your orders before you'd stepped in, before sliding
Hard
out,
liquor.
Backing out the door.
Thank you very much. Whiskey, bring the bottle.
We might be
they
getting
really
into something.
They don't really have a lot of that in this cafe.
Oh my God. Why did Martella
coffee.
Bring me here?
Having, coffee. Just get coffee.
Lady Marilla inclines her head as you step in. Smiles after the bows and curtsies and all the rest of that stuff are exchanged that are traditional. Smiles at each of you.
All the etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining me on such short notice.
Of course.
So what exactly seems to be the issue?
Issues there are, yes. But please, she gestures towards the chairs.
Albie rushes to pull the chair for you, for Josephine.
She makes sure that you are watching as she rolls her eyes, but accepts the chair.
Rolls her eyes and then takes the chair next to it. No.
Oh, gosh.
She's not that mean.
No.
Poor little heart.
Isidore flops down in a chair and immediately props his feet up on the table.
I knock his feet off and sit down next to him.
There is kind of a disgusted look from, almost everyone here of like can you have some respect for the establishment, man?
Yeah, how dare.
Don't prop your dirty boots up next to our food.
This is, you said there was a map and stuff. It would have been off to the corner.
No, there's a neatly folded map, and then there's the giant plate of pastries and your tea.
I wouldn't have put my feet anywhere near the food.
I had hoped to have a chance to catch up with you under better circumstances and with less pressing time constraints, but it seems that time has conspired against us. Have you met Baron Dalcine? She gestures over. Any of those of you wish may make me a knowledge nobility.
I roll a 6 for a 15. I'm going to think probably not. Poor Albie.
Isidore rolls a 1 for a 7. He does
Were
not.
Were you raised in a barn, man?
Josephine got a 13 for a 20.
Okay, that's better.
And Dalcine, did you say his name was?
Dalcine.
Oh, I recognize that name as a player.
I cannot say that we have met, but I do know your reputation.
I'm flattered.
Izzy eyes Josephine when trying to decide if she means good or bad reputation.
Yeah.
Right now, it's probably neutral. I mean, right. She lived in Opara, so she'd probably heard his name.
I am quite flattered, Countess Escalar, and pleased that all of you could join us today. Well, this evening now. How the time gets away from us. Mm. We may have seen one another in passing, perhaps, at one soiree or another, but I do not believe that we have ever been, in fact, properly introduced. I am Baron Jaco Dalcine. It's a pleasure to make all of your acquaintance.
Pleasure.
Right. I am afraid my, let us simply say business in Absalom keeps me far too busy and far too far away from the salons of Taldor to meet people of such esteem as yourselves.
Did he say slums of Taldor?
Salons.
Salons. Okay. I was like, okay.
I don't really go to salons, so... Is it our shrugs?
Nobody's surprised by that news. And also, I gotta say, I'm real curious about what this urgent need that you have for us, Ambassador, might be.
Oh, of course. Lady Marilla smiles. Well, unfortunately, this is not so much a social visit, as you've obviously gathered. But in fact, it's because of the Baron and my mutual contacts in Absalom, the Pathfinder Society, that I reached out.
I see.
My friends in the society have warned me of a threat to the Empire, the man says before sipping at his tea.
A threat?
Yes. He reaches out, taps on the map that he's neatly folded on the table in front of all of you. You can see here that it is a map of the city of Opara. It seems like a single building has been circled on the corner of a street in Arden's View.
Do I recognize the building by any chance?
No, but if it's an Arden's View, it has to be a noble estate or a townhouse or something like that.
Hmm. It would really suck if it was my townhouse.
Call's coming from within the house.
We need this building burned to the ground.
Wait, that's my house.
Well, how can we help prevent this threat from happening?
What exactly is the threat as well?
Well, the threat is dire indeed. You see, this townhouse here is a...
Mimic.
A facade. A mimic, perhaps. No.
Okay.
It's the entrance to an underground vault.
Oh.
The vault belonged to an old noble family of Taldor that was expelled a decade ago. The Declans. Perhaps you're familiar with the Declans.
Are we familiar with the Declans?
May make a knowledge nobility if you so wish.
All right. Let's see.
All right. 15 for a 24. I could roll from my sheet.
Isidore also rolls an 18 for a 24.
Nice.
And Josephine got a 10 for a 17.
So I'll go ahead and give it to more our Landgrave and our Count, really. But you all had heard of the Declans, considering the stir that was created when they were banished 10 years ago.
Oh.
The Declans were led by a man, you believe his name was Lord Orias Declan, who is a beloved Oparan nobleman until about 10 years ago. When he and the entirety of his family were stripped of their lands and titles and banished. Rumors circulate that there were Chelish agents which threatened his family and were trying to extort him, as the Declans, like some other families, like perhaps even your own friend, Lord Vernon Castner, have family members that are both part of Taldor as well as part of Chiliax. It is believed that the Chilexian branch of the family was trying to extort the local branch, and somehow, and you're not entirely positive, the Lion Blades got involved.
Oh,
my.
I mean, just rumors that the Chelish branch of the family was using the Oparan branch of the family to manipulate them or something, and the Lion's Blades got involved.
Oh, honestly, that's about the gist of it. The vault belonged to the Declans.
And there's something real bad in the vault.
It's very bad if it falls into the wrong hands, yes. Hmm. You see, the family was forced out when their patriarch, a man known as Orias, I believe, was discovered to have written documents detailing the city's catacombs, old passages. He was a historian of some respect. However, unfortunately, his focus was primarily around Arden's View, Worldbreaker Hill, Senate Hill, the Imperial Square. shall we say, a detailed examination of a lot of old and underused tunnels beneath the very heart of our capital and its government.
Ah. So basically providing a possible way to infiltrate.
It could be very well. Rumors circled, and I can tell you that many of these were true, that the man was extorted by his family outside of Tal'Dor, the Chalaxian branch of his family.
You know this is confirmed.
Yes. The two branches had a very, let's simply say, profitable relationship between them.
How is it that you know this information, but no one else does?
Oh, I know a great deal, mostly because I keep a close eye on the enemies of Tal'Dor.
That really did not answer my question.
No, it didn't. He flashes a smile.
He's not going to answer you, Josie.
I'm not trying to be evasive. I've simply done my due diligence, my research. Getting to the point, there are documents that detail the catacombs beneath Senate's Hill. Some would say documents that would allow an individual to sneak a assassin into the very Senate itself. And these documents could be made available to our enemies.
And they're in the vaults, and you need somebody to get it because somebody from Chiliax is on their way to get it, and if they get it, it's bad.
You're very good at jumping to conclusions. Marilla holds up a hand. A Pathfinder was looking into the Declans and their knowledge of the Undercity. A man named Rutilus Daradin. He was attacked and killed 10 days ago in Westcrown.
Ah.
The mercenaries involved in his abduction and death are a group known as the Devil's Claw Company. Rumors hold that they are made up of Hell Knight recruits that were too bloodthirsty for any of the orders to accept them.
Well, that's saying something.
Yes, the thugs made off with the Pathfinder's journal. Fortunately, he'd already sent a missive to the Society. They received it earlier today. They contacted me magically to alert me to the danger, as they believe... He sips at his tea. They believe it was the work of the Declan's oldest child, a young woman named Lady Selena. And she is the reason that this assignment is, shall we say, now urgent. The fact that Selena and her forces were willing to kill Pathfinder for this information shows how desperate they are to retrieve the documents. If she were able to get these documents, return them back to Chiliax, it could undermine the defenses of all the government buildings in Opara. It could undermine the defenses of the Senate, or perhaps even the Imperial Palace itself.
And they have reason to be angry.
Well, don't the Chalaxians always?
Well, I mean, the family for being stripped and banished.
Oh, yeah, no, it certainly makes sense that they'd want vengeance of some sort.
All of you may make a sense motive. So, Isidore, you don't really notice much pertaining towards this Baron Dalcine. The man's face, again, at first you took it as the appearance of someone who is just smugly self-confident. However, you've quickly learned that that's kind of a mask. Like, that expression never breaks. It's like he's just trained his face to be perpetually like that. And as such, he is very difficult to read. However, as you're asking this question pertaining towards the family having reason to be upset, Marilla leans back slightly, sips her tea, and raises up a finger in that, like, we'll talk after.
All right, so...
Yeah.
Pathfinder digs around somewhere he shouldn't have been digging, learns of a secret of this family... is killed by the daughter of the family seeking vengeance, who now is paying or joined this gang. And now we believe that they are all heading here to Opara to get into this vault and take the documents, etc. The guy was killed this morning.
10 days ago.
The Pathfinder was killed 10 days ago.
I only received
the information today, and he glances over as Lady Marilla looks up, and I... went through my own contacts and found out a Chillish ship arrived this morning. And on the list of passengers includes Lady Declan. So, I have informed the Lion's Blades. However, they have not started moving yet, to my knowledge. And since we are concerned about this situation, Lady Marilla said that all of you are, well, shall we say, incredibly capable and discreet.
That's true. Izzy looks at Marilla like, you said I was discreet. That's hilarious, but doesn't say anything.
The other two of us will keep you discreet.
There's also the idea of you're not going to go and like brag about it in a tavern or anything like that. Yeah. Oh, I've got this entire binder full of all these maps of how to sneak into the Senate. Ha ha.
Josephine would be the one kicking your shin underneath the table if you did.
So yes, you have about the right of it.
All right.
Unfortunately, we don't really know their numbers. Only that they're less than a dozen.
I do the mental math. Okay.
I suppose that's something.
And if we can retrieve these documents and, shall we say, eliminate Lady Declund, then, well, we should be
eliminate.
Safe.
Eliminate.
And what exactly do you plan to do with these documents?
Turning them back over to the proper authorities. Or Lady Marilla can, or you can. Whomever has the time. I'm certain that they'll find their way to a dusty old shelf somewhere in the Senate building.
I'm sorry. When you say eliminate, are you asking us specifically to kill this woman? Because if violence breaks out, that's one thing, but I'm not going to assassinate anyone.
Oh, no, no. Absolutely. I'm not asking you to assassinate anyone. I'm simply saying that the threat to Taldor needs to be dealt with.
And we will do so as we see fit.
If you can capture her, I'm certain that she'll be tried properly and imprisoned or executed. I suppose the question is whether or not she's directly responsible for the Pathfinder's murder.
You're very cold about the situation.
There's nothing to be done for it. The man's dead. Perhaps the society will take some arrangements or something for him, but of course, raising someone from the dead is quite the feat of itself. And as far as this woman is concerned, well, either you'll succeed, or she'll get the papers. Hopefully, you succeed.
How's Marilla looking during this entire exchange?
She's just sipping at her tea.
Well, I think we have a good idea of what we're being asked to do, and we can certainly take care of it. Was there anything else?
Nothing else as far as I'm concerned. He glances over towards Lady Marilla, who shakes her head. No, I think I can walk you down, of course.
Oh, thank God.
Good. Great.
Well then, for Taldor.
Yes,
for Taldor. Izzy grabs like 3 extra pastries off the table as they're leaving.
As a side note, I do appreciate how in the faction letters in Pathfinder Society, he literally signs it for Taldor, exclamation point, and then his name. It's basically like saying sincerely. It's just for prince and country. Lady Marilla stands to her feet.
I do eat a pastry for sure.
Yeah. Inclines her head back towards the Baron, who stands up, bows to each of you. It has been a pleasure to make all of your acquaintance, and I hope to do so again in the future.
Have a pleasant evening.
You as well. I assume you then turn and make your way out and back down the stairs as Lady Marilla leads you downstairs and then outside. Again, the sun is setting. By this point, it's just this red haze on the far horizon. And the night's beginning in full, which, to be fair, in West Park tends to be fairly exciting. So,
Gloriana, what is that man's deal?
Oh, he's obviously awful. I kind of, you know, I'm real glad I don't have your job, Gloriana. Why am I calling her Gloriana? Lady Marilla.
Baron Dalcine is
insufferable.
A difficult man whose heart is in the right place. The man loves Taldor. And he is extraordinarily skilled in the arts of politics and intrigue.
Better than me.
However, he is very much of the old guard's belief in things. The idea of setting enemies against enemies. And is somewhat, should we simply say, heartless in his approach to many matters. I had wanted to have the opportunity to speak with all of you before you make your way.
Of course.
Shall we simply say to give you a additional objective? I know a little bit more about the Declans' plight, as I had followed it with some interest when it originally had occurred. The Declans were an expanding noble family within the social hierarchy of Opara. She begins to walk with you, basically following the road down towards the Imperial Palace along the northern side of Senate's Hill. They were led by the esteemed Arias Declund. The family had lost their lands during the Chelish Uprising, much like the Castors.
Is that due to their connection with Chiliax?
No, their lands were in Chiliax. But again, much like the Castors, there was a branch that were Taldan, and then there was a branch that was Chilaxian. The Taldan branch, much again like the Castners, never recovered much more than a small holding. Their holding amounted to a few houses in Opara, not even an estate to call their own. Arias Declund was a famed historian. That was his one true love, if you ask most. He'd tried to distance his family from their Chilaxian relations. However, most of the Declans' resources and their import came from that relationship. They acted as an intermediary for Chelish materials, importing of lumber, silver, other matters. However, of course, their willingness to work with their distant cousins left a perpetual stain on their reputations, something that differentiates them from the Kastners. For many years, Arias was considered to be one of the most influential nobles in Opara. There were people that had spoken of him in the same breath as openings in the Senate. To my understanding, he was asked by his Chelish family to turn over documents relating towards the old tunnels of Opara.
I'm going to guess he refused.
I don't know that for certain. I don't know, in fact, for certain that he was asked, although it was part of the trial that was held against him, and the Lion Blades believed they had enough evidence to say that he was. I do know that there are 3 reports of attempted assassination attempts against him. That doesn't seem likely for a man that was...
cooperating.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if the assassins were Lion's Blades, there would not have been a record. There is also a single account of an attempted poisoning of his daughter. Not a lethal dose, but just enough to send a message.
Okay.
When the family was stripped and banished, what happened to her? Did she go back to the family in Chilliex?
And what happened to Arias? Is he in prison?
That is the thing. The Lion's Blades discovered this plot, the details of which I am uncertain. All I know is that he was tried for his, perhaps, weakness and his love of his daughter. He agreed to work with the Chilaxians and promised to hand over several maps of prominent structures in the city of Opara. He'd stated in court in exchange for the sparing of his daughter. Arias had plans to drop the documents with his Chelish contacts, but was apprehended by the Lion Blades. His family had been a force of great good for Opara. This had granted him some respect amongst the Senate, and he had made a single request that he be tried as an individual, separate from the rest of his family, that his treasonous actions would only impact him. The Senate ended up debating the case. Once it had been raised up to, shall we say, a citywide scandal, it was believed that they had leaned towards leniency. However, the Grand Prince stepped in, and so the entire family was stripped of their holdings, their titles, and expelled from Tal'Dor.
Interesting.
Seems extreme.
Yes.
The Grand Prince, she pauses, glancing up towards the Imperial Palace. He is known to give in to occasional passions. It is quite possible that he interpreted this attempt as a direct attempt on his own life.
He is much different than I remember him.
I had little experience with the man, but Princess Eutropia has told me much the same. They were expelled from Tal'Dor. With no other options, Arias and his family made their way to their cousins in West Crown, the former capital of Chilliax. Since that time, the Declans that were once Tal'Dane have been unable to rise above the minor status and remain a small and abused family in the brutal politics of that devil-bound nation. Considering the ill treatment that they've received, I'm not surprised that Selena has taken these steps to attempt to gain prestige in Chilliax and revenge herself against the Senate and the Grand Prince.
And it is confirmed that she is the one behind this.
I simply know that she is here.
Well, we'll just have to ask her.
That brings us to my request. I would like you to take every step possible to spare the girl.
Oh, so you can ask
her. Oh, so you don't want us to, what was the word he
eliminate?
Used? Yes, eliminate, yeah.
Ah, my lord.
If she is guilty of murder or has taken any of those steps, then she should be tried.
Agreed.
However, to my knowledge, she is a girl of 18. Banished when she was 8 years old from her home.
They tried to poison an 8-year-old. Here I was thinking she was like, I don't know, at least around our age.
Well, of course, they're trying to threaten a dad. They're going to poison the kid. Doesn't matter if the kid's 8.
Yeah, I don't know. I just figured she was older.
To be fair, they worship the Prince of Lies in hell
itself.
Well,
I mean, I know, but I don't know. My mind went teenager.
I don't know why I'm saying to be fair as if it makes it fair, but...
Well, you know.
Yeah, I'm not killing an 18-year-old kid who's gotten screwed over by 2 nations at this point.
I don't think it was ever on the table.
Well, yeah, I mean, unless she's about to kill one of us, sure. But that's a different situation.
The fact that he would even suggest to us that we eliminate this, it did not sit well with me.
No.
The man, shall we say, is cold.
That's an understatement.
Some people don't see other people as people. They see him as pawns in this big game or whatever.
I would say more accurately would be that the Baron sees threats to Tal'Dor as threats to Tal'Dor, regardless of their age or their circumstances.
Circumstances are important.
I agree. And in this case, the circumstances are... What little I know pertaining towards this family is that they were treated unfairly.
Yeah.
It sounds like we need to discover more truth before we can make any judgments.
Maybe we'll get lucky and find something else in the vault besides these maps.
Well, if nothing else, we're the ones going in, and we know that we don't just wantonly murder people, so I feel a lot better about the whole situation.
And while Baron Dalcine's views are strictly Tal'Dane, and I, of course, am attempting to support my country, our overall goal is wider than that, as you are well aware. Nobility united. If Selena can be convinced that there are those that recognize the ill treatment of her family, that there are those that would be willing to work to seeing that crime rectified, were to, shall we say, a woman of much greater political pull than I able to take certain steps in the future.
Hmm.
That perhaps if she were willing to return back to Chiliax and continue to provide us information to keep our own nation safe, well, then we could be united towards a common goal.
You want to turn her into a spy?
I want her to be sympathetic to our nation. I want her to no longer be a threat to Tal'Dor, and would prefer if she were an asset.
Yeah, a spy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sounds fine.
I just worry that we'll put her in danger more than she...
Well, I feel like this girl probably just knows danger, and I don't know if she knows much else.
If it is her choice, it is her choice.
Regardless, for her actions here, she will likely need to stand trial.
Mm.
And if that is the case, then I will have the opportunity to speak with her.
That's true.
I simply need all of you to convince her to stand down, if possible. And if she were to surrender herself, it would make matters much easier. I know I'm asking a great deal, but perhaps it would mean something to her to know that there are people sympathetic to what her family has gone through.
Mm. Well, we'll do our best.
That is all I can ask.
Well... Burning daylight at this point.
I suppose we should get on with it then.
She inclines her head.
Let's hope the number of people with her is on the lower end of 12 and not the higher end of 12.
I have faith in your abilities.
You've got me.
Okay. I'll be just like throws his hands up. I don't know.
You only got one sword, dude.
Yeah, you got one big sword. You don't even have a shield. Don't talk to me.
But
I do such much damage, though.
Lady Marilla bows her head. Then, my count, countess, landgrave, I will return back to the Lazy Lion, make certain that the Baron is kept entertained. And we'll see you when you return.
All right.
Hopefully we will see you soon.
For Tal'Dor.
For Tal'Dor.
Yep, for Tal'Dor. In the good way, not the weird eliminate people way.
Yeah.
Murder for Tal'Dor.
No.
Arson for Tal'Dor.
If you add for Tal'Dor at the end of it, it'll be fine.
That is not how that works.
Regicide for Tal'Dor.
We are not the regiciders. Wrong sure. Game.
Not yet.
But she flags down a carriage, and I suppose in the meantime, you make your way following along the road there, down around following the northern side of Senate's Hill between Senate's Hill and the Imperial Square before continuing to follow that down past Arden's View and in the shadow of the Seven Towers Hill before eventually making your way all the way down to a number of townhouses that lay in the shadow of the Basilica of the Last Man, this massive temple to Aridin that stands up upon the hill, which you have no reason to go to. Although if anyone's interested in, go back and check on Sovereign Court episode 1, where Hennessy did a little dive beneath the Basilica of the Last Man.
Oh, all right.
Following the map, though, you eventually make your way back and along the streets before arriving at a beautiful brick building. This townhouse that kind of melds the architectural style of Aridin's View with the revival aesthetic that has grown more and more popular. Basically, think colonial in that it's right. The we've kind of reinvented the old Taldane style. So we have lots of columns up at the front and these wide arching windows to recapture that, in our world, that Romanesque structural design. But all I can think of are colonial homes that are just like, it's got the nice front and the porch and everything.
All I can think is like plantation houses.
Yeah, you know. Although it's more of like a townhouse than a plant house.
Yeah, more Roman villa.
No, it's not Monticello or anything like that. Making your way forward, however, you can see, the sun's set in full by this point, and you can see a small flickering candle in one barred window on the building's west side. There's a single door which leads into the structure.
Like, were we given a key to get in or anything?
No, they don't have a key.
Either of you learned how to pick locks in the past few years?
I'm real good at just breaking things. We could see if any windows are open. We could knock. That feels bad. I don't know.
I don't think knocking is what we need to do.
Well, we can go peek in some windows and see what we see.
Yeah, you're only one level of druid, aren't you?
Yep, just one.
Yeah. It'd have been amazing if you just like looked over at all of them, pointed at the door, just warp wood, and the door just pops out and falls over. I love that spell so much.
All right.
Unfortunately, I'm more fighter than druid. Let's go peek in a window.
Yeah, let's be real inconspicuous trying to get into this house. Izzy kind of glances up and down the street.
It's fine. Just pretend we belong. And if they stop us, we'll just show our rings and tell them who we are. Right? I don't know. That's how things work in the city, isn't it? I spend a lot of time out in the country. All right, let's go.
You would be surprised if you just have confidence. People will ignore you.
So you're approaching the windows?
Yeah, I guess we're going to peek in a window and start trying doors and windows and finding a way into this house that doesn't involve breaking and entering.
Yeah. So making your way up towards the structure. First off, there are windows, although there are only windows along one side. Again, this is a townhouse, and so they don't have windows on the ground floor facing towards the building on the other side. They just have windows that overlook the street and then the hill, because the hill looks down over the... it's a distance away from here, the cliff that leads down to the ocean, some 200 yards.
All right.
Circling around the structure, you find that there's the front entrance. Surprisingly, there's not a servant's entrance to this building. However, there are three windows that line along. Well, there are two windows on the front, but to be perfectly honest, trying to go through those windows would be no less conspicuous than trying to go through the front door.
Yeah.
There are three windows along one side, however. All of the windows on the ground floor are barred, which is not an uncommon practice.
And then there's not a back door?
There's not a back door. There's only the front entrance and then three windows along the side and then two windows up towards the front. Glancing through the windows, you find that two of the windows, the curtains are currently drawn. But the third window, the one that you saw the light in, as you begin to approach it, you see that someone seems to have simply set a candle down in a candle holder here. The candle's almost completely burned away. There's only like a stub of wax left.
I wonder if that's some sort of signal, like she came with the key and the candle's letting everyone else know where it is or something.
Maybe.
Seems weird.
Or it could be just to deter people.
As you glance inside, of the building from here, you can see into a living room or maybe a sitting room of some size. It's difficult to determine exactly which one it is because it's difficult to make out the furniture. Even with only the faint light of this one candle, you can see some of the room. However, all of the furniture are covered in white sheets. I will allow a perception roll from the party.
Okay. I got a 9 for a 15.
Izzy rolls a 14 for a 23.
So, Albert, it's a window. You just kind of glance around in there and go like, well, no one's been living here in a while. Josephine glancing inside, again, while you you are blind and cannot see very far. You can, of course, see perfectly, even in the darkness as you glance inside of there. And you can make out that it's a relatively large size room. And again, I think you're the tallest here. One of the tallest. You guys are all in the 6-foot crowd, so you can easily glance in there and look around. But it's Isidore, as you step forward, as you lean and glance inside.
A ghost reaches through the window and grabs you.
You do note two things. First off, the bars in the window here are old. Again, this building has been relatively well taken care of, but it's obvious that no one has replaced the bars on any of the windows over here. And as such, the river breeze, the humidity, and all the rest of that stuff over time has taken its toll.
Yeah, if you've ever been to a beach town.
Yeah, you think you could just grab onto these and wrench them free.
Oh, nice.
Or at the very least, someone who's exceptionally strong could, which I believe includes Isidore.
Yeah, I have a strength of 18, so...
Yeah, me too. We're samesies on these.
God, you guys are...
I'm a fighter!
I am a ranger with a big sword. I hit things, they die.
Is this the 6 foot tall muscle crew?
Yeah, even our healer is a muscly lady.
But the other thing that you note is... for a moment, you do hear conversation.
Oh.
Not clear enough that you can make out what they're saying, but it sounds to be coming from ahead and off towards the right, which, judging by the general layout of this area, you're going to think is probably the kitchen. You hear a brief conversation, a creaking sound, as of like an old wooden door, and then a thunk, and the conversation stops as if someone had gone through a door and closed it behind them.
There are people definitely inside. I heard somebody talking and then maybe a door shutting back towards what's probably the kitchen if this house follows normal layout.
All right, well.
It's not one of those non-Euclidean townhouses.
Well, I mean, sometimes you walk into a house and you're like, wow, this is weird. Yeah.
True.
All those apartments you walk into and like the door just opens right into the kitchen.
Yeah.
Always weirds me out.
That's like most apartments.
It's always weird.
So these... bars are really rusty.
We could help them with maintenance by removing them.
Exactly.
You don't think that would be heard?
Well, it's either that or break down the door.
We could knock, and that might be surprising enough that they would just open it.
So we're either doing a little B&E or we're knocking.
Yeah.
I think with this group, no matter what you're doing, it's a little breaking in and entering.
Yeah.
Knocking isn't. If we knock and they open it, that's technically fine.
It's fair.
I mean,
we're just two big himbos looking at our lady handler to tell us what
I'm
to do.
I'm just thinking, like, it's going to make a lot of noise. Like, so is knocking, but I'm like...
We can try to shoulder it real quiet, but I don't know if that's possible.
Do we have any tools on us that would make it less noisy?
I have a crowbar.
I was going to say, a crowbar would technically make it a little bit less grabbing onto this and shaking it back and forth to pull it free.
I have a crowbar.
Like, part of me wants to, like, have somebody go create a distraction elsewhere while we pry it off.
I could go knock on the door. Y'all pry this open. But then we'd be split. There's only three of us. There might be 12 of them in here, so...
Yeah.
I say we just open the window. They left a lit candle in here unattended with all this cloth and stuff. That's a real bad idea.
We're preventing a fire.
If you say so.
All
right. Just be as quiet as you can.
Izzy will take hold of the bars and yank.
You're going to use your crowbar and I'm going to help? Is that a thing
we
can do?
Yeah, I think that's what we're doing.
Yeah, you can use the crowbar if you so wish. So I suppose then go ahead and give me an aid another. I think only two people could probably work on this. So go ahead and give me an aid another from
the blind Albert. Girl is keeping a lookout.
That's right.
Well, you're keeping an ear out.
Strength check, right?
Yep, strength check, DC 10 for your aid another.
Yeah, easily. A 15 for a 19.
All right. And then, Heather, that will be a strength check plus two for the aid another, and then plus an additional two if you're using crowbar.
Yeah, that's...
I roll a one for a nine. I lose my grip on
so
the crowbar.
So you step forward, you grab onto this crowbar. In the meantime, Albert grabs onto the side of the bars. You just kind of look back, maybe cast a little, like, give a little wink back towards Josephine of, like, what's this?
Oh, no.
And then you, like, bring the crowbar up to jam it, like, right next to one of the bolts.
Uh-huh.
And it just glances off of that, and there's just this ksh, as it goes straight through one of the panes of the window.
Okay, you
what
never say watch this to her.
Quietly.
You
did
can't
we
say
not understand?
It jinxes you when you try to impress her. You've got to do it without saying it out loud. Trust me on this. I've been trying it for years. All right, we try again. And now it's lighter.
You know she hates both of us, right?
She doesn't hate both of us. She sat in the chair I pulled out earlier.
Are you all in competition for me now? Is that what's happening?
I don't know. I think Izzy just likes to compete. I'm going to aid you again. I rolled a number. I rolled a 7, which actually gets me an 11, which is just enough to pass. I don't know why I put plus 2. My strength is plus 4.
Okay. All right.
So yes, I aid you again.
I think there are probably a couple thruple shippers out there, so.
All right, that's better. I roll a 16 and get a 24.
Yeah, that is much better.
So, after being properly chastised.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You sit there and just go like, all right, fine. You wedge it in there. It's not elegant. But it's effective. Not cool. As you just kind of like wedge it in there and then pop that open, reach over to the other side, wedge it in, pop that open. After a minute's work, yeah, you can take that. You just gently set that down off towards the side. You find a bush to put it behind.
Sure. No one came and investigated the broken glass, which we probably were going to have to break anyway because the window's probably locked.
That's fair. I blow out the candle.
I'm going to laugh if it's not, though.
Is the window locked?
Yeah, Albert, you reach forward, you slide open the window with no problem and blow out the candle. Because they didn't lock the barred.
Why?
There's literally bars.
Locked, you said. Locked.
Hey, the bars would have been a problem either way, you two. Let's all take a deep breath. I blew out the fire hazard. We've done our duty. Now let's climb in this window. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right, I'll give you a leg up.
All right. Give him a little boost up. You slide in as gracefully as you can. Leery of the broken glass all over the floor as you slide your way in.
I'm wearing agile breastplate. I'm actually pretty, you know, lithe and stuff in it.
But I don't imagine you're doing a combat roll through the window over broken glass. So just kind of make your way in, do that kind of... Again, they always try to make it look cool in the movies, but especially because like these windows are already like shoulder level, so you're getting like boosted up to it, but there's no real cool way to go through a window like that.
Kick that glass out of the way so she doesn't step in it.
Yeah, Izzy will clear out the glass and then offer a hand to Josie.
You don't want the dragon lady to hurt herself on some glass.
And I'll offer you a little hand up, like a, you know, put the hands, you can step on them thing.
I mean, she's going to take the help.
I helped Izzy too.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to take the help, but when she gets in there, she probably just like gives you guys a look like, I literally like fight bandits and get muddy and gross. Like, you guys are treating me like a lady.
I heard the
bee
sound and I thought she was going to say, I literally fight bears. What are you doing?
I probably have fought a bear.
We're just being gentlemen.
Yes.
I know. She's not used to this, though. It's like, y'all are being gentlemen in the end. It's like,
you are the only girl in a group with four dudes. If you think any of us don't spoil the crap out of you, you're insane.
No, because it's probably you treat me just like one of the boys.
But see, we don't have the two foppish ones with us. And so we're both like, oh, God, we have to be the gentlemen. Like, how do we do this?
I like the fact that she's like, I come from the prefecture where you don't handshake. That just lets them get close enough to knife you.
Yeah, probably.
Well, we would never knife
but
you.
I suppose then
you wouldn't get close. She'd shank
Isidore,
you
reach down and help Albert up into the window, and you dust yourselves off.
Okay.
You stand inside the darkened house.
So the voices were coming from that direction. Izzy points.
We're not stealthy, right? We're not trying to sneak. I can just cast light, so I can see.
I can be quiet.
See in the dark, so. Your light makes no never mind to me.
Okay, well, first of all, you're very impressive. We already know that. We've been knowing that for a long time. And second of all, I'm going to cast a light spell on my, I don't know, necklace, I guess.
Not going to do it on your signet ring and have like a Green Lantern power ring? Anyway.
No, that's weird.
Yeah, you cast a light spell. And again, you sit here in this this finely appointed sitting room. Again, all of the furniture are covered in sheets, as are the portraits on the walls, which gives it an oddly disturbing quality. Off towards the side, you can see a sheeted form draped over a, you're going to assume, a grandfather clock that has stopped, judging by its outline.
This isn't spooky at all.
It is weird that all the stuff's untouched. I mean, I guess it's good, but it's weird, right?
You can see a single exit that leads out into the central hallway and then another exit that heads towards a dining room.
We follow the voices?
Yeah, I'm going to draw my sword. Let's go.
Yep, me too. Big old falchion.
We're not saying
you don't hear
there.
Any voices now, so are you just heading towards the back of the house?
Yeah, heading towards where I heard the voices.
Making your way back, you circle through the dining room. Again, covered in sheets. Everything in here has a layer of dust on it that you would say is probably about 10 years.
I'm surprised, like, the property wasn't seized or something.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's weird.
Past that, you then find a rather unassuming-looking door that leads into the kitchen. Stepping into the kitchen, you find it's a well-maintained kitchen. Again, there's not sheets over anything in here. There's just a large island in the center, a stove off towards one side, a sink back towards the back side. There's also a sign here that there used to be a door to the back of the house. However, that's completely bricked over.
That's a weird choice.
Interesting.
I wonder if that's where the vault is.
There's only a single door that exits out of this room, which you're going to guess leads into the pantry.
Surely they didn't
check that. I want to check that too, because if this place, like, especially if he was keeping like historical information, he probably has some sort of secret stuff going on.
Maybe it's an illusion. Do we believe that the brick wall is there?
Do you want to punch the
wall? The pantry's the place I want to check. Because
yeah, let's check the pantry.
If you heard people back here talking and walking somewhere and closing a door, the only place they could have gone was the pantry or the door that's bricked up. And I feel like the pantry's easier.
The only way to see if that's an illusionary wall is to walk into it at full speed.
Ouch.
This is not...
This is not a FromSoft game where you just have to barrel roll into every wall to see if it's an illusion.
Ah, yeah, there we go. That's better.
You make your way over, I suppose, open the door to the pantry and find, it seems that whoever put all the sheets and all the rest of that in here did clear out the pantry as well. Go ahead and give me a perception roll for the party.
I roll a 13 for a 19.
I roll 10 for a 19.
We're just going to be samesies today.
Mm-hmm.
Both of you do notice one thing of interest, however. There was, at one point, a simple, unassuming rug that was laid down in here. Probably means by which to keep anything from... any spills from damaging the floor, anything like that. This has been rolled out of the way. As you lean down, you look this over, it seems inconsequential, with the exception that there's no dust underneath it. Like, basically, the floor in here is dust-free.
Trapdoor.
As you look down, you can see that the floor itself doesn't seem to contain a trapdoor. However, curiously, in the wood grain on the floor, there was a knot. However, that knot has been knocked out, leaving just a hole roughly an inch in diameter.
So you can poke your finger in there and open it?
I'm not sticking my finger in it.
Izzy will shove his finger in the hole.
Okay.
And then try to pull up.
Let me make sure I'm not standing in the way.
And your finger gets chopped off.
No!
Jessica's like, I have too much experience with putting my hand places.
I need my fingies. My phalanges.
Isidor, you leaned out.
You poke somebody in the eye by poking your finger in there.
The wood creaks underneath your boots. Lean down. Stick your finger into this dark hole. Kind of hook your finger in there.
I have an intelligence and a wisdom of 14. I am far too intelligent and have enough common sense that I should not be doing this.
Oh, you're smarter than me. I'm just a 10 intelligence. My wisdom.
Subconsciously, you're sure it's just your imagination. You feel like a tickle on your finger that you're like, is there a rat or a spider? You then pull up. There's a creak sound.
I don't love it.
Of hinges.
Oh, okay.
Does the brick wall open?
No. However, the nails that were holding the section of the floor in place, the boards, appear to have been completely useless.
In that
they don't actually have bottoms. It seems like this is just five planks attached to... two hinges that functions as a trap door.
See, I said trap door.
Although without an obvious access to it. As you pull this up, you can glance down, particularly as Albert kind of leans over your shoulder and looks down.
Well, no wonder they didn't hear us.
To see a flight of stairs that descends down.
All right.
Gentleman first.
Well, yeah, of course. I got a shield. I can do it.
Stick your Green Lantern ring down there and cast
it. It's my necklace, thank you.
I mean, Izzy will go down the stairs. We've got to do the thing.
What?
Actually, real quickly, can I look? Can I see anything? Because considering my night or my dark vision.
Oh, if you look before the light
goes in there. Not immediately. Yeah, I mean, your dark vision allows you to see 30 feet, so you can see the dim illumination past the dim illumination that your companions can, but. No, it looks like it's a flight of stairs. It only actually descends down for a short distance. You'd say no more than about 10, 15 feet before emptying out into a chamber, you believe.
All right, well, let's go.
I don't see anything immediately dangerous.
Good. We head down the stairs.
Yep.
Descending down the stairs. As you descend the stairs, you enter into a rather large room that is immediately recognizable to all of you as a wine cellar.
Sure.
A rather spacious one, and not really a surprise to find one underneath a manor house. Numerous wine casks line the surrounding walls, and two wine racks stand free on the far side of the chamber, all of them having sat down here for years and years, accumulating dust once again. As you reach the bottom of the stairs, the one thing that draws your attention, however, is the far end of this chamber, where you see a wide, almost 9 foot wide, archway that exits this chamber. The architectural style down here is substantially different than what you would normally expect. The stairs themselves were of a obviously modern Taldane style, However, once you get down here, everything here looks like old Taldane. As if the house was built and then they simply happened to have noticed that they'd built on top of a structure that was left over from old Taldor and simply repurposed it into a wine room. However, what really draws your attention to the archway that leads out of here is the flickering torchlight from beyond it. Very distantly, you hear two masculine voices, of which Isidore is able to recognize as the same two that he'd heard before.
Well, let's go say hello.
Yeah. We don't really have anything else to do, so we'll start heading that way.
Yep.
As you move forward past this room, you enter into a large room. Basically down a almost 20-foot long hallway, you step into a chamber, the ceiling in here still no higher than about 10 feet. However, the room is divided, split by 10-foot high shelving between four pillars that occupy a space out from about 10 feet or maybe 15 feet from the corners of this room. Its exact size is hard to tell, but you'd say maybe 50 feet wide and possibly longer than that. However, the entirety of this room is filled with crates and chests and barrels and boxes containing a variety of what honestly you would consider to be, being that none of you are probably exactly historians.
Yeah.
Old Taldor detritus. Like very old vases and arms left over from statues that the rest of them are either long gone or the arms were stolen first. You're not quite positive. A variety of trinkets and such left over, and these shelves that are arrayed in various stacks containing numerous historical items. There are four torch sconces in this room, and all four of these have been lit, providing a fair amount of illumination for the chamber and chasing away many of the shadows. However, as you step in, you do see that you are not alone in this room. Two men stand at the far side of the chamber in the conversation with a third. As the two men glance over towards, as they basically see you, the two men that are in the chamber turn back towards you, narrow their eyes as they reach down and begin to pull the long swords free from the sheaths on their hips. Each of these men wearing a red tabard emblazoned with a black claw reaching up through the center of the chest.
All right.
Okay.
The third man wears a similar one. However, as he glances over all of you, he spits out a curse. For those of you familiar with the infernal tongue, I don't know if that's any of you, in some language, before turning and taking off running down the hallway, shouting an alarm as he's heading off deeper into the complex.
Really?
And I will need initiative from the party next time.
Really? Just running away. All right.
Ba-da-ba-ba.
Yep. Yeah,
he takes a standard action to shoot a crossbow at you, and then he runs.
How dare you?
Nah.
Really? We're just going to flee.
That's because he's
yelling for help. He's getting the backup. There's supposed to be like a dozen of these guys, right?
We must be pretty scary looking. We all look down, and we're like, we're all pretty big people. We're like,
I need to start pulling out all the Robert E. Howard descriptions, you know. Find the Path Ventures is an officially licensed partner of Paizo Incorporated. War for the Crown is copyright 2018. War for the Crown and the Pathfinder Venture Path are trademarks of Paizo. All Pathfinder images are property of Paizo and are used with permission.